Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. The political landscape hasn't just shifted. The race for president has moved to a whole new map.
With President Joe Biden bowing out, Democrats cauterize and coalesce around Vice President Kamala Harris.
We have earned the support of enough delegates to secure the Democratic nomination.
Kamala.
Hello. Hi.
America's first black president saying he'll do what he can to elect the second.
Michelle and I couldn't be prouder to endorse you and to do everything we can to get you through this election and into the Oval Office.
Might Illinois lose its governor when Harris selects a running mate?
You know, obviously you'd have to consider it if you're asked, but...
No matter what, Governor Pritzker and Chicago will play a starring role as hosts of the Democratic National Convention.
And let me state this unequivocally. Chicago was ready. We were born ready.
But are students ready to get back in the classroom? A month out from back to school, Chicago's Board of Education passes a new budget.
This is a budget that starts with equity, not enrollment.
We say fight back!
And the teachers' union isn't happy.
CPS chose cuts and overcrowded classrooms instead of trying to find creative funding solutions.
And a Springfield woman called the police for help.
Is there anything else we can do for you? Is there anything else I can do for you?
Only to be shot to death. The nation grapples with what it sees in the killing of Sonia Massie.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Michael Liptrot from Southside Weekly, Becky Vivi from Chalkbeat Chicago, Rufus Williams from WVON, and also Steve Daniels from the Chicago Tribune. So, President Biden will step aside. Let's hear a little more of his Oval Office speech explaining this historic decision.
You know, in recent weeks, it's become clear to me that I need to unite my party in this critical endeavor. I believe my record as president, my leadership in the world, my vision for America's future, all merited a second term. But nothing, nothing can come in the way of saving our democracy. That includes personal ambition.
Rufus, over to you first. The president clearly thinks that he deserves a second term. So why then is he not even trying?
Well, because too many people were suggesting that the numbers weren't looking good and perhaps he should step away. There was too much groundswell, just too much movement. And, you know, what tended to happen, the speech was only a month ago. The debate was only a month ago. And all of the discussion from the debate was how Biden was and what should come next. He said that only God Almighty was going to get him to step down, and it seems like Nancy Pelosi may be God Almighty. You know, some conversations were happening, and ultimately last Sunday at 1:45, we all learned that things had shifted and things had changed, and a lot of concern had been about how you get this party together, how you get to someone that would keep it together and move forward. And to watch what the vice president did in the time between the time, the 23 minutes from the time in which he said he was going to drop out, and then he came back and he endorsed her, the movement happened, and there was no other candidate anyplace who could step forward. It's just been an amazing week, an amazing journey.
So much news moving so fast. Before we get to Vice President Harris and her future, Steve, I want to go back a bit on the legacy and what this means for Joe Biden. Is this going to be sort of what he is remembered for?
Well, it certainly will be something that he's remembered for. I think his legacy is TBD, to be honest, and will depend very much on what happens in the election.
As in, if Harris presumably
wins. If Harris
wins.
Loses, I think that's the fact that he hung on as long as he did, after the debate, 15 minutes into the debate, most Democrats that I know thought, this is done, this can't go on. And he spent another 3 weeks fighting and clawing and grasping to hang on, which, you know, Democrats, Kamala Harris, and the rest of the party have a very, very short period of time to put a campaign together and to take on a formidable opponent.
So if she loses, you're saying it'll be seen as he wasted too much time. If she wins, this will be a shining star on his legacy?
Yes, pretty much. I mean, I think that if she loses, it's a real black mark If she wins, he will be remembered very, very fondly.
Becky, now you hear a lot of talk from Republicans. Hey, Democrats are supposed to be the party of democracy. What are they doing about all of these voters who chose Joe Biden as their nominee?
Right. I think that's what's interesting is that a lot, you know, it feels like a month ago that this happened, but a lot happened between the debate and his decision, including that the former president and his opponent had an attempted assassination on his life. And so I think that coupled with the RNC, really made this a difficult, almost a decision that had to be made among Democrats. And I think even for people who voted for him in the primary, and primary voters tend to be party diehards, if you will. And so I think that those same people might have been the people who were also saying, you know, really, we need to consider a new candidate or a shifting on the ticket. But there are certainly process questions now at this point. What happens and how do they go through the steps of picking a vice president, getting their ducks in order before the Ohio ballot needs to be certified on August 7th? These are all interesting.
A roll call view, kind of stealing some of the thunder out of Chicago hosting the DNC, but so many questions there. Now, Michael, what do you think that this means for the dynamics of the race? Steve talked about how there might have been lost time, but is it also, I mean, I feel like just recently we were talking about Democrats and this cycle of self-inflicting damage by calling for Biden to step away. Now it seems like there's a heck of a lot of enthusiasm. How do you see the dynamics?
This was definitely a game time decision when it comes to what Becky put as the momentum. And when we think about Trump's assassination attempt in context with the RNC days later and the united front that the Republican Party was able to pull together, pushing Trump even further in his ambition, seeing the comparison of the two. And this is something that in the state Biden was in and it not helping the situation that Biden also got COVID and step down while actively having COVID, it's definitely something that the Democratic Party is doing the best they can to get together.
You know, it's a lot that went on there. And, you know, I forgot about Biden and COVID because there's been so much that's happened in this last week. But you just think about the fact the RNC happened. The RNC was just a week ago. And then on Sunday, Biden decides to step out and this whirlwind happened. So all of the jump that the RNC would seem to have gotten seems to have gone away.
Yeah, I know. The momentum is shifting all the time. It's like, what's the October surprise going to be? You know, I mean, there's been so many surprises, June and July and August surprises.
100 days can be nothing, but it can also be quite a lifetime. And speaking of quick, Rufus, let's go back to you. How was it that Harris was able to galvanize so many delegates behind her so quickly that nobody else even put their name in?
When she had her conversation with Joe Biden on Sunday morning, she called in her people. They had a meeting. They put together the list. And so as soon as he put out the letter, they started making calls. She made 100 calls on that day. Every call began with, I didn't want today to get away without me talking to you. And she, with the people who would have come in and run against her, she pulled them in first. And they were able, this was a master class and how you organize and get something done. And she did it with aplomb. And so we watch, and this time, all these delegates, by Tuesday evening, she had enough delegates to get her through. This is a masterclass in how to
organize. It didn't hurt that she had a history and relationship with former Speaker Nancy Pelosi either. I mean, I think that did not hurt her.
She had somebody to help her out. No, Michael, I know you've been doing some reporting on this, and including what her candidacy means for some Chicago delegates, Chicago leaders, Black women.
Right. And so not only when it comes to delegates, but when thinking about from a fundraising standpoint, how momentous Sunday was, where in 24 hours, Kamala Harris was able to raise $81 million. And two things that really stood out on Sunday to me was two Zoom calls, one by a group called Win with Black Women, another by a group called Win with Black Men. And between the two, they raised close to $2.5 million, where one had 90,000 people viewing, another had 55,000 people in attendance. And then now, just the grassroots organizing that's picking up this week. And so in my reporting, looking at specifically Kamala Harris's sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha, and what this means is based in Hyde Park, their international headquarters. And I spoke with people like Tony Preckwinkle, who's a member, Senator Maddie Hunter, Representative Kimberly Dubuclet, and the sense of pride and this new energy that's been injected into the Democratic Party leading to the convention, it's definitely going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot and a great momentum for them to compete with Donald Trump.
Galvanize the voter base. You know, black women helped elect Joe Biden as well, and I think that can't be discounted.
There have been questions voters about themselves, who they going to be back at the ballot box.
Yeah, I think that was the first step, was to get the base back, because parts of the base were gone, were leaving, either for lack of enthusiasm, just going to sit it out. Some folks, you know, polls were showing 20% of black men were voting for Trump. This was going, I'm going back to well before the debate, but there were repeated polls showing that, not just one. So the first thing that needed to happen was to get the base back, and that has happened, at least apparently has happened very, very quickly.
Harris,
57,000 black men were on the call on Monday night. There have since then been Latinas for Harris. There have been white women for Harris last night, over 100,000. And so these affinity groups have come together. This has just been an amazing week on so many different levels.
It really is a spectacle. I've been watching, you know, raising Trump's Hulk Hogan in Kid Rock to a Beyonce and maybe a Taylor Swift. We'll see about the cat ladies. But let's see. If Harris is running for president, that, of course, means that there is a vice presidential opening on the ticket. And there are reports that Harris is considering Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker for that position. Let's hear what Pritzker had to say when asked about that earlier this week.
You know, I love being governor of Illinois. The people of Illinois have graced me with that title for the last two elections. And, you know, I'd be reluctant to make a change, but it'd be hard to resist a call and consideration if the nominee called me to ask to be considered for vice president.
Becky, assess Governor Pritzker's chances at running for VP.
Well, I mean, it was certainly an eloquent and very political answer, and I don't think anyone's going to know.
He practiced that a couple times.
I think has practiced that, yes. And I don't think anybody will know probably until, you know, maybe minutes before it's announced. There's obviously a lot of reporting and speculation, and certainly behind the scenes vetting multiple candidates. I don't doubt that she's had calls with him. He would bring obviously fundraising power and a pretty big ability to bring that. There are a few things that I think make him not quite the pick, which is that Illinois is a blue state. He is a billionaire, and I think that she could be looking for somebody who's a little more maybe appealing to the Biden white working class group that seems to have gone toward the Trump camp. And so this VP pick will be very interesting. I think whether it's our governor or not, you know, he does love being governor. So
of course he does. Of course.
Leads with that every time.
Steve, just briefly, why is the governor being so cagey about it? He was asked by Chicago reporters and he was not that definite. Just, oh, I love being governor.
Well, I mean, I think that's what you do in these situations. I think we've seen every candidate for vice president, whether him or all the many others,
we sort just have of to
behave
accept this,
the
basically.
Same way. Yeah, and so that's just kind of what you do in this situation. I would be shocked if Governor Pritzker were picked as the vice president.
What about a cabinet position, though?
Yes, that's a different issue, and you know that he will be participating very actively in the campaign. Money will obviously be part of it. You know, his sister was commerce secretary, you know. Maybe we have the first brother-sister commerce. Yeah, who knows? I mean, we're getting way ahead of anything. But at any rate, yes, I think that's the more likely outcome for him than vice president.
Well, and even if he's not on the ticket, Chicago and Pritzker are going to be playing a big role in the presidential race with, of course, the DNC coming up August 19th. Now, Michael, Chicago just learned what impact that is going to have, Chicago residents, that is, learned the impact that that's going to have on their getting around, particularly if you are trying to get anywhere close to United Center or McCormick Place, no thank you, basically. Security is saying you can't. What are your expectations for this convention? Are you, is in your reporting, talking to residents that are excited about it or saying, ugh?
It's definitely going to be, it's going to obstruct people's ability to get around. And thinking about not only the pedestrian restricted areas, the car restricted areas, but the CPD presence, what's that going to be like? Last time I was here, we spoke about Snelling and just the different tactics that they were going to take from the Inspector General's report, that she didn't think CPD was at the best place to handle protesters. So all of this, from how pedestrians are restricted to the almost imminent protests that are going to happen, seeing how Chicago police handles the DNC, and looking at the RNC and the arrest and a death that happened at the RNC, was not from Milwaukee police. It was from Ohio officers who were there. And that's something I'm looking more into, to see, on top of Chicago police, will there be officers from other police districts or other states here as well?
And Snelling trying to give, that's the superintendent of the CPD, trying to give assurances. He says, we're going to keep Chicago police in neighborhoods where there will be the most interaction with residents, and really trying to say that we are prepared for this. First Amendment rights will be exercised, but we will not take any vandalism. Steve Rufus, anything that you want to add in terms of, as this is rapidly approaching?
I will say, I was in Milwaukee for the RNC, and the perimeter was pretty tight. And so you had to walk five blocks at least to get any place. And I think here we'll have the same thing with the perimeter. So at the actual site, it's going to be safe. It's going to be fine. It is going to be disruptive to people. That's the
perks. That's part of it. It's a big event.
It's kind of what happens. It's a big event. It's coming here, and that's what we will see. It's unfortunate, the shooting of the homeless man in Milwaukee. It wasn't a lot of coverage. There were a lot of officers from all over the country. So I suspect that we'll see the same thing likely inside the perimeter, but not on our streets.
You know, you referenced earlier the attempted assassination of a former president and candidate for a president. Does that change anything in terms of security or how you feel about it?
Well, that happened outside, right? So I think, you know, given the parameters of what happened in that shooting, I think, yes, security beefs up, but I don't know that it changes a lot, because I think they were prepared for what this is going to be anyway. It was also interesting in Milwaukee. I know they had protesters. I just never saw any. And I was there for two different days.
I've got to agree. I was there all week and didn't encounter any, save for coming in through security, a couple people, I think, wearing more religious signs versus a protest. And just before we move on briefly, Steve, the governor of Texas, hinting still that more migrants are going to be coming. Chicago City Council had a hearing on this week. Is the city, mayor says that we're prepared. Is the city prepared for that portion of perhaps folks coming in?
Well, we'll see, right? But I feel reasonably confident that, you know, they've been through the migrant waves now several times. So it's not as if this is the first or even second time that they're dealing with something like this. So practice does help on things mm-hmm. like that. There's a lot going on. So much going on. Of all of the things that are going on, I think that's a little bit lower down on the list.
No, let's move on to a story that has unfortunately garnered headlines around the world, and that is a Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy, Sean Grayson, now has been charged with multiple counts of murder after killing Sonia Massey earlier this month in Springfield. Now, Michael, the body camera footage of this encounter is really hard to watch. What thoughts go through your mind when you have had to screen that video?
To be honest, Amanda, I purposely and intentionally did not watch the body cam footage until I was coming on today. Mm-hmm. And I watched it in the green room shortly before coming out. And after seeing it, and just this era we're in with social media, where we're becoming desensitized to seeing this, there's a particular emotion that I don't think we've designated yet for Black people seeing life taken away simply for the fact of being Black. And it's one thing to be out and be stopped or potentially harassed by police for a pretextual stop for walking on the street, but to not have that peace in your home and to live alone as a woman and be alone as a woman and have a threat or perceived danger and call the police for help only to end up dying yourself is unacceptable. So this is going to be a story that we're going to follow, and this is going to be something that, similar to the death of George Floyd and so many other names that have been ingrained in American history, is going to, we have to follow.
But we haven't seen, I mean, it has gotten a lot of attention. We haven't seen the protests, the quite the same movement as took off after, say, the murder of George Floyd. Why not?
Very often those protests happen because we hear a similar story. Someone feared for their lives, and they reacted to that. Here we've got body cam footage. We've got a lady who called, who's got a pot of water, and a threat from the officer that I will shoot you in the face. And then he does and offers nothing after that. He's fired, he's in jail for murder. Those are the things that often we're looking for when it happens. This is a different situation. This is an officer who worked for six different police departments in 4 years. There's got to be a national registry of these police officers so we understand what happened here. Why are you moving there? If there are some infractions that people should be concerned about, then they shouldn't be there. For him to be as calm as he was after having shot this lady in her face in her house, to just say, you know, you don't need to apply any first aid. She's gone. It was a headshot. I mean, for him to be that callous, there's something wrong with the hiring of the officers, with the reviews of who becomes an officer that
is
allows
that something
it to
that's
happen.
Harder to actually, you know, enforce? Again, as you noted, he was fired from the department. He has been indicted. Those steps taken. Is that something that can be legislated, or?
We were able to get a national registry for child abusers. That took a lot, and I recall back in the 90s when all that was flaring up. We got it done. This has to happen. We cannot continue to have people die because an officer is overzealous, as he was, for whatever the reason. There is a problem with his hiring. There's a problem with him. And unfortunately, we have others who are in the police departments around the country.
With Grayson, especially, working six different jobs over the course of 4 years, that not setting off a red flag
yes.
to any hiring manager at a police department, any HR department, that we need to look into the reasons that this person parted with six other or five other police departments before getting here. And those type of things can be, from a system standpoint, be instituted to.
Right. It becomes all the more critical because so many departments are desperately trying to hire officers. So, including the Chicago Police Department, they're short of people. So it's going to lead to people being hired that shouldn't be hired, like as in this case.
So much more to find out here.
I'd rather have fewer officers than be dead. I mean, there's a clear way in which it can be done. But we have technology. There are other things that can be implemented while we're short.
Oh, yeah.
But what's happening, if this is what's happening, we've got to have a better answer.
Yeah, I don't know who could disagree with that after watching that video. We're going to end the show by talking about the Chicago Public Schools budget. So let's look to the future. Becky, the Board of Education passed a nearly $10 billion budget, but not without opposition, including from the mayor's office and the teachers union. But these were the mayor's appointees, so what gives?
Mm-hmm. Well, I should start by saying that this budget is going to need to be amended. It does not include any contractual raises because the contract for the teachers union is being negotiated.
So we know it's going to get more expensive.
Will likely get more expensive, correct. And I think the mayor's office is also, as we reported last week, pushing for some interesting potential solutions, including borrowing more, which I think the officials at the CPS budget office were, you know, kind of pushing back on, saying that's not the solution here. Another thing to put in context is that we're coming to the end of federal COVID money in the school system and in school districts across the state and every state across the nation. School districts are out of that money. And I think for the last 4 years, people don't realize that school budgets have been supported and propped up by that federal COVID money. It's going away. And so tough choices had to be made in order to balance this budget and get it passed. They didn't pass it on time even. Usually they pass it in June. They bumped it to July. And again, it will likely be amended. We've seen this in the past in 2012, 2019, 2016. Every time they negotiated a new teacher's contract, they had to pass an amendment in September or October to adjust the budget again and make sure that it would be balanced with those raises and costs included. So TBD, I would say, consider this draft one, and there will be probably noise continuing from parties who have interests.
Noise continuing and more money needed. We are going to leave it there. Our thanks to Michael Liptrot, Becky Vivi, Rufus Williams, and Steve Daniels. We are back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our show for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and The Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website. That's WTTW.com/news. Now, for The Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night. Great weekend. Steve, I want to go to you because you penned an editorial talking about our House Speaker, Mike Madigan, and his best friend, Michael McLean, finally wanting to take a split just as they're about to take the stand together. Regular best friend activity.
Yeah, it was very interesting, wasn't it, after everything we heard about Mike Madigan and Mike McLean's relationship in the ComEd 4 trial last year, which is a very close relationship. They were very, very close friends. It went well beyond business. And you know, Mike Madigan didn't seem like a guy who had a lot of close friends, to be honest, for somebody so powerful. So this was one of the few, and this is a man who is now, or his lawyer.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its founder and senior partner, Robert Clifford, who ranked number one in the state of Illinois by Super Lawyers Top 10 2024 Illinois Super Lawyers List.